Now we will hear stories from your fellow congregants practicing resilience, intentionally or unintentionally, that help us sustain our planet. I will begin. My favorite sustainability practice is going to the Leesburg Farmers Market every Saturday morning, spring, summer, fall, and winter. I miss it when I'm out of town on grandmother duty. I love the Leesburg Farmers Market. First, the produce is so fresh. It lasts at least twice as long as produce from the grocery store. It doesn't go as bad as quickly and end up in the trash. Did you know that 40% of the food produced in the U.S. is wasted, rotting in landfills? That rotting food waste produces methane gas. Methane stays in the atmosphere a shorter time than the primary greenhouse gas, carbon dioxide, but traps 80 times more heat. If food waste was a country, it would be the fourth largest methane polluter. 77% of methane emissions come from landfills, so diverting food waste from landfills can have a huge impact. To minimize food waste, be sure to buy only what you will use, compost food waste at home or through the Loudoun County, buy produce from the farmers market because it stays fresh longer. Second, I learned so much from the passionate vendors. A milk vendor told me when he grew up in Jefferson County, West Virginia, there were 900 dairy farms. Today, there are only four due to consolidation into large-scale milking facilities. For this small dairy farmer, the Leesburg Farmers Market is his lifeline. All vendors at the farmers market are small-scale, grow many different kinds of veggies, and are within 120 miles of Loudoun. So shopping at the farmers market supports the local small-scale economy. Vendors do not use inhumane factory farming practices that damages the environment. The maple syrup vendor is a government retiree. He held a farm tour showing us how to tap trees, produce and bottle syrup right here in Loudoun County. Lucky for us, this Leesburg vendor was not impacted in 2024 when the Canadian maple syrup reserves hit a 16-year low, almost running out. Canada's billion-dollar iconic industry was nearly done in by an unusually warm winter caused by climate change. Third, I get to know the people who provide my food. My mushroom and egg vendor, Rooster Dirt Farm, has two young daughters nearly the same ages as my North Carolina granddaughters. The owner of my favorite produce vendor, Fireside Farm, struck up a conversation after seeing me one evening at the Loudoun County Board of Supervisors public hearing. We got to talking about Western Loudoun farming and data centers. When I heard about her GoFundMe campaign, I gladly made a donation. Fireside Farm grows many different heirloom crops using regenerative agricultural practices that do not harm the environment and keeps soil in the ground. There's music at the market too. It's family and pet friendly. With ready-to-eat homemade foods and many beverage options, going to the farmers market is like going to a party. Plus, I see folks I know, including Jenna. I love my Saturdays at the Leesburg Farmers Market. If you haven't been, you're missing out on a gem. Okay, now I'd like to invite Tamar to share her story.
Good morning. My name is Tamar Dutton. My pronouns are she, thank you, she, hers. And I'm delighted to be here this morning to talk about one of the ways I practice resilience and sustainability. Spoiler alert, it's composting. I used to be a gardener, and composting was a very practical way to enrich the soil with vital nutrients for healthier plants. And then, together with my wife and in-laws, I bought a beach house. Long story short, Being away for weeks at a time in the spring, summer, and fall is not compatible with maintaining a healthy garden. Plus, I'm lucky enough to have neighbors with a very large garden that routinely yield surplus produce, so I don't have to do without fresh and local veggies and fruits. Plus, there's the farmer's market. So once we let our garden go fallow, I stopped composting because, you know, what am I going to do with all that rich dirt? Then, about 8 or 10 years ago, we're not sure exactly, I attended a workshop that Natalie held right here in our beloved chapel. It was a structured, solution-oriented presentation from Project Drawdown. Drawdown.org. If you don't know them, look them up. They are a wealth of information. And I'll never forget that day and what I learned. It was like a light bulb going off. I learned that composting is actually one of the most effective ways to combat climate change. It's not just healthy for your garden, it's healthy for the planet. Suddenly, it felt wrong to throw carrot peels and orange rinds away. And it is wrong, especially if you care about the climate. Composting, as Natalie mentioned, diverts organic waste from landfills and reduces the production of methane and other greenhouse gases. Composting also helps with water conservation by improving the soil's water-holding capacity. And there's a whole organization that's focused on researching this, compostfoundation.org. Now, Natalie and Jared would not be happy with me if I just stopped there at my why without offering some practical pointers about how you too can be part of the composting solution. And I know not everyone has access or opportunity to build glorious bins like these, which are, to be clear, not mine. mine is a simple green tumbler. So if you have a bucket, a bin, or really any kind of receptacle, you can collect food waste, including fruits, vegetables, pasta, bread, cereal, rice, beans, eggs, eggshells, meat, raw or cooked, bones, seafood, meat and shells, dairy, cheese, yogurt, baking ingredients, herbs and spices, coffee grounds and filters, tea bags, plate scrapings, and leftovers. All of that can be taken to the Loudoun County Landfill Recycling Center, which is right nearby, though not open on Sundays, sorry. So thank you, Natalie, for organizing Project Drawdown those many years ago, and for inspiring me and so many others to do our part for this beautiful blue boat we call home.
Thank you, Tamara. Okay, next up we'll have Andy.
My name is Andrew Dunham. My pronouns are he, him, his. I've been either actively engaged in farming or agriculturally adjacent my entire life, mostly raising organic vegetables commercially and for a nonprofit. And my tips for resilience, so those are some of the transplants on my Iowa farm. Some of my tips for resilience are going to be talking about the food system as a whole. The first statement I'm going to make is extraordinarily depressing. So I'm probably one of the more knowledgeable lay people in the United States about the food system. I don't think I could design the American food system to be worse than it currently is, full stop. Like it is as unsustainable as you can make a food system. If you made it immediately more unsustainable, farmers would be going after politicians with pitchforks. We're guaranteed as farmers to not go broke in a single year if you're growing commodities, but almost guaranteed to go out of business over the course of your lifetime. So, what my tips here are, how do we as a community change or be in at least knowledgeable enough to encourage change concerning our food system? So the questions I like to ask myself, because we can't change this individually, like shopping at the Leesburg Farmers Market is great, but we can't really scale that to make it so that every single person in Loudoun County, if they all went to the Leesburg Farmers Market next week, the vendors would run out of produce before it started. And so what are we going to do as a community or as a nation to try to change some of these things? So the things to ask questions about are labor. So is the labor being used to grow your food, is it adequately compensated for the region in which it's grown? So in the United States, is that a living wage? If it's coming from Mexico, is it a living Mexican wage? Oftentimes the answer is no. Is the labor forced? Do farm laborers have adequate access to water, shade, protection from heat and cold, housing, all of those sorts of things? And in many cases, the answer to that is no. The land and water that's being used, is the land being farmed in a way that allows it to be farmed into the future? So produce-wise, the vast majority of produce in the last number of years has actually shifted. We actually import more produce now than we grow in the United States. That did not used to be the case even a few years ago. And a lot of it has shifted to Mexico, where it's kind of the slash and burn style agriculture, where they'll go into a place, farm it for 5 or 10 years. When the soil's depleted, they just move on to another place. So are we doing it in ways that don't deplete aquifers, rivers, lakes, and other sources of fresh water? You read about the Ogallala in Nebraska and things like that, and the answer is often no. Is pollution and erosion from runoff being minimized? Are the people living in the areas that aren't farming actively, are they being affected by pesticide spray drift, airborne particulate, and or other forms of farm pollution? And often the answer is yes. So I come from Iowa, which the headlines there over the last couple of years have really been focused on being a cancer cluster. And a lot of that is directly related to pesticide exposure. So what do we do about these sorts of things? So one of the things I always like to talk about is externalized costs. So in the United States, almost all of the costs associated with agriculture are externalized. So you're not actually, when you go to the grocery store and you buy a 2-pound bag of carrots for, let's say, you know, $1.99 or something like that, almost all of the cost of growing that carrot from a climate perspective, from a health perspective, from a labor perspective, are borne by either the federal government, the state government, the agricultural communities in which it was grown, or from places that are mined for resources. So like the Strait of Hormuz is bringing some of this into focus. Fertilizer prices have gone through the roof because we make a lot of fertilizer from natural gas, which has a climate consideration to it. And so this year, at least in the Midwest, all of the farmers planting fully expect to lose money before they've even put seed in the ground. And it's been that case for a number of years. So this is, in my view, the externalized cost problem is one of the biggest problems we face in the US. Just making that nitrogen fertilizer from natural gas is hands down the largest pollution producing event. So you can talk all you want about having a bag tax or something like that. Just the nitrogen fertilizer going into your food is the biggest carbon emissions step in the whole process. Food miles matter, but really it's that nitrogen fertilizer that's the biggest one. Pesticides, we don't even talk about this. But you hear farmers say, well, we're more efficient, or the Farm Bureau might say this, we're more efficient with growing now than we ever were. We only use 1 quart of active ingredient per acre to produce corn in the Midwest. Well, that 1 quart of active ingredient is an extraordinarily complex molecule that might have 3 barrels of oil baked into the production of it. And so you extrapolate that across tens of thousands or millions of acres, there's also a huge carbon cost and none of that is, when you read the statistics, none of that's baked in to the carbon cost of food. So Natalie talked about, you know, the 40% that's wasted. Really, when you look at all of the externalized costs, oftentimes it's like 30 to 40% of all of our carbon emissions worldwide are related to the production of food and or fiber. And so a lot of times you'll say on farm sources, the Farm Bureau likes to cite 10%. And that's just like emissions from the tractor, emissions from, you know, depletion of soil organic carbon in the soil, things like that. But the true figure is closer to 30 to 40%. So as a society, if we really want to get ahead of climate emission or carbon emissions, we really need to deal with the food system as a whole. So now I go into what can we do about it? And it really is government support. So we have the food system we have because of the Farm Bill, full stop. The Farm Bill determines what we do here in the United States. And it's a form of like subsidizing externalized costs. So we're saying we have an ethanol mandate, for example. So I'm gonna say something that it's a little, I know the math behind it, so it's kind of hard to communicate this to people who aren't as familiar with it. So we're taking fossil fuels to grow corn in the Midwest. And then we're turning a kernel of corn into a liquid fuel to go into our fuel tank to supposedly displace a fossil fuel use. The ethanol mandate is 100% a SOP to the fossil fuel industry. And all it does is draw marginal agricultural land into corn production. And so the narrative around this really is, it really has kind of warped our brains as to what's going on. If you really want to burn ethanol in your car, you need to move to Brazil, where they use sugar cane, and it's like 8 to 10 times more efficient than what we do in the US. That actually might make some sense. What do we do about the Farm Bill? So we're overdue to have a new one. It's almost over by 2 years or something like that. You know, we had an extension and now it's expired. We need to focus on reducing externalized costs. And how do we do that? Do I have all the answers? I don't have all the answers. But the nice thing is if we talk to our representatives and we talk to the people who are in positions of making those decisions, I think we need to just go with that message. We need to reduce the externalized costs in our food system. So hopefully that was uplifting.
Sorry, that was.
Okay, that's great. More than we ever wanted to know about what we eat and how it's produced. Okay. Anne Marie, this would be much lighter, I guarantee you.
No data. Good morning. My name's Anne Marie Morreale. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And I just want to preface this: when Natalie sent me an email asking if I would speak today, I said yes, and then I just started writing, and this is what happened. So I share this with you. 2026 Earth Day, time with the grass. Go on a picnic by yourself, in a park or your yard. Make sure to spread the blanket under a tree. Lean against the tree. Feel the bark through your shirt. Taste some strawberries or blueberries while looking at the green grass. And see the ants. Lie down. Put a pillow under your head and under your knees. Feel the unevenness of the ground on your back. Close your eyes, listen, smell, breathe. Open your eyes and gaze up at the canopy of branches. Look at the clouds. Breathe. Blink. Note the breeze as it moves the leaves, the cloud shapes as they change. Feel the calm. See your cleared mind. Be there. Then nap in nature's lap. Whether sitting on the ground or on a stump or in a chair, you can know the art, music, dance, wonder, humor, and fullness of nature pierce your heart. Just by giving yourself time in the grass.
Thank you, Anne Marie. Linda McConnell is a member of the Earth Justice Team, and she sadly wasn't able to attend today. She regrets it, but she did send a video of her story.
Good morning. My name is Linda McConnell. As long as I can remember, I've loved being in the outdoors. Nature is my church, where I feel most at peace, centered, and connected to the world around me. I don't want to see our natural environment neglected, destroyed, or disappeared. These days, the number and scope of issues threatening our environment is overwhelming, such as loss of wildlife habitat, climate change, and rollback of environmental regulations that were protecting our health and environment. I feel a personal responsibility to do the small things I can to reduce my carbon footprint, to protect and improve habitat for local wildlife, and to live more sustainably. I buy food and beverages in metal or paper-based packaging, use sustainable bamboo-based paper products, use battery-operated lawn equipment, compost my food waste, and drive a hybrid car. But sometimes I wonder if the individual actions I'm taking really make any difference. Am I kidding myself thinking that little old me doing these things has any impact at all in the greater scheme of things? Though global, regional, and local environmental issues seem insurmountable, small, consistent actions adopted by a single person, you, me, can collectively contribute to larger environmental impacts, inspire others, and create a ripple effect. An example of this is the Reston Ploggers, spelled P-L-O-G-G-E-R-S, a group that came up on my Facebook feed last year. The group only has 24 members, but highlights how individuals and a small community of like-minded people can make a difference. Their mission is to encourage Restonians to help clean up Reston and protect our environment by plogging. If you pick up a piece of trash while out on a walk or a jog, you're a plogger. You are helping to keep Reston beautiful and protect our planet. The word plogging refers to picking up litter while walking or jogging and derives from the Swedish verb plocka upp, which means to pick up. The plogging movement started around 2016 and currently has an estimated 2 million people plogging daily in 100 countries. I love it, and though I didn't realize it, I've been a plogger for many decades. This is the type of engagement that inspires me to continue taking my individual actions. Every person has the power to make a difference in the environment, no matter how small. You cannot get through a single day without having an impact on the world around you. What you do makes a difference, and you have to decide what kind of difference you want to make. Jane Goodall, one of the most celebrated conservationists in the world.
But that was excellent. Our last speaker is Jeff Erickson.
Wow, that was nice. Thanks, Dave. Anne was talking this morning earlier about a metaphor. I'm going to start with a metaphor. I'm sure some, if not all of you, have heard this before, but it involves breakfast, and a bacon and eggs breakfast in particular. And it's said that with a bacon and eggs breakfast, a chicken is involved, but the pig is committed. And these days, I feel a lot more like the chicken than the pig. My life is a series of kind of half measures. And I feel kind of guilty about, I feel half guilty about that. But it's a way that I feel like I can contribute to addressing the climate crisis and the environmental crisis more broadly without putting my life on the line. In fact, I don't even put a lot of my resources on the line for this. And the reason that I'm telling you this is because I hope to encourage or give you some ideas about some of the things that you can do as well. And you've heard from the others some of what you'll hear as kind of a repeat with me. I don't have rooftop solar on my house. But we do buy green blocks of energy from our local utility. And you can all do that. And it's not so easy to find it on their website. And it's not the same as having rooftop solar on your house. But it does, at least from an accounting, an energy accounting standpoint, a climate accounting standpoint, it does utilize renewable resources rather than fossil resources. I drive an internal combustion engine car that doesn't get great gas mileage. And we have a full EV that we use as much as we can, especially now, and that's becoming actually financially beneficial as the price of gasoline continues to go up. Everything we eat is not organic or local, but a lot of it is. We do visit the farmer's market. I'll put in a plug for the place where my daughter works, the View of Heaven Farms, which has fantastic greens, as well as some really great sweet treats that we hear from Kelly every week about how that was made and what's in them. I don't have a natural lawn, but I do have a lawn service called Natural Lawn. And they state that the ingredients that they use to treat the lawn for weeds and others is natural rather than chemical. And I feel like it's doing my part to mitigate some of the impact on local streams, the Potomac River, and ultimately the Chesapeake Bay. I'm really inconsistent with advocating, and the tools are out there for me. I see them every day, actually. I don't always sign a petition. I don't always call my elected representatives or send them an email, and I strive to do better at that. But those mechanisms are available for all of us. We still have food waste as much as we try to minimize it. But we do have a compost bin as well. It's not the one that Tamar showed, but it's one that we built and we use, and then we put it on our garden and our flowers throughout the year. And it's a great closed loop for that. 3 years ago, I retired. The second half of my career was mostly focused on climate mitigation efforts in different ways. And I still am searching for kind of my second act and what I can do to have more of a positive impact. My big confession is that I know that carbon offsets are available for the flights that I take. Again, it's not a perfect solution, but it's something we can do. Maybe a half measure, but that's more than no measure. And I will say that it's there for me, right in front of me. And I don't take that extra step to buy a $7 carbon credit to add to my flight ticket to get from here to Denver. Our house is usually warmer than perhaps it could be. That means more fuel for the heat in the summer, but in the winter, but on the flip side, less air conditioning in the summer. So I think that kind of balances out as well. As I was thinking about what to say today, and I ignored most of the advice I got from Natalie and others, creating this list actually kind of helped me inspire to strive to do better, to do more. And I hope that there are at least a couple of ideas that y'all pulled from what I said and what from others said today about how you can tread more softly on this earth. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Okay, we will end our sermon with a climate oath from Dr. Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson's second edition of the book, What If We Get It Right? It explores innovative climate solutions and visions for thriving communities. On the majesty of turquoise seas and fireflies and aspen trees, on the honor of our parents, our ancestors, and humans to come, on the wonders of laughter and sunshine, I make these devotions to climate solutions for my community and for our magnificent planet. There are four parts of the pledge. I'll say a few words in between each part, and then together we'll recite the words on the screen. First, move from I to we. Please recite with me. We will expand our sense of interdependence. We will rein in our sense of individualism. We will ask, what should we do together? Survival is collective. Our fates are intertwined. Second, do no harm. Please recite with me. We will restore and heal, not pollute and deplete. We will regenerate ecosystems and our own resolve. We will live lightly as part of the earth, accountability, generosity, and sweetness. Third, less is more. Please recite with me. We will expand creativity and contract our consumerism. We will conserve and distinguish between needing and wanting. We will be gentle with our own imperfections and others. There is such a thing as enough. Possibility exists. Please recite with me. This is a world of our making. We can remake it, remix it, restore it, rebalance it. The path of least resistance is only one of many paths. I will be part of getting it right. We will be part of getting it right. Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh teaches that personal transformation is the seed for systemic change.